At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
We got to talk about some though. So you won Lou Henson Mid-Major Player of the Year, and you didn't win MEAC Player of the Year. Yo,
it's some crazy stuff behind that. But
that's an off-air topic.
And I can be on air. It don't really matter. The MEAC conference. How upset I am.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here with my boy and co-host, Neruda Perdomo. Fire episode for you guys coming up where we talk with Brian Moore Jr., currently at GCU, just coming off a crazy year at Norfolk State where he was the Lou Henson Award winner, which means mid-major player of the year. That's OD. He was really turning up in the MEAC. And it was a really good conversation, but before we continue, big shout out to my guy, Tay Fisher. A lot of love because he patched us in with Brian. Brian was more than willing to get on the pod, but shout out to my guy, Tay. He always been there for me since I was a JIT. Shout out to you. But the NBA free agency is going crazy right now. So before we talk about this episode with Brian, bro, maybe let's do like who you think the biggest winner is throughout this offseason, just right now. So we're recording on a Tuesday night. A lot of stuff has happened. Ty Jerome to the Grizzlies, Duncan to the Pistons. I keep on going, but just tell me who you think the winner of the offseason is so far.
The Rockets definitely, you know, added Dorian Finney-Smith, Clint Capella, and obviously Kevin Durant. So they switched from really being a young up-and-coming team to like kind of now a vet team with, you know, you got Fred VanVleet, you know, Amen Thompson, Jabari Smith, KD, and Sengun, and now you got all those, you know, vets coming off the bench or however they decide to start. So definitely really interested to see how they play out this year. And then I got to give a sneaky shout out to the Detroit Pistons, as much as that hurts to say, you know, I'm a Knicks fan, but really happy for, you know, Duncan signing a new deal with them. Shout out, bro. Like that's really, really excited to see what he does this year, but they also signed Caris LeVert as well. So that's definitely a good pickup for them. And, you know, they're trying to build on the success that, you know, they've already had there, and they got two guys who are proven winners. So those are my probably two picks. Let me hear your favorite one and then your sneaky pick.
Real quick to bounce off the Pistons one, I'm a big Caris LeVert fan. I got OG Caris LeVert jerseys. Low key, I don't even think you know, but I got mad jerseys. I got to show you one day. But Caris definitely my guy. So the Pistons might have been my sneaky team, but I'll give you my winner. I'm going to say the Atlanta Hawks. Obviously, they just got Kristaps Porzingis, and they got rid of Georges Niang, you know. My feelings on Georges, but also they just signed Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Luke Kennard. So this team has the ability to really put on a lot of different lineups. They can go five out offense, and we know what Trae Young can do, ice trade a game, and spread offenses, allowing him to work. But also they can like put four defenders around him, four long defenders that can really get it done. So I'm excited to see that team play. They can go Kristaps at the five. They can go Jalen Johnson at the five if they want to go small. It's a lot of versatility throughout that roster. And I think that I'm not too much of a like salary cap guy or something like that, but I think they have an MLE ability to sign somebody else. So I'm intrigued to see what goes on over here. My second sneaky is the Nuggets, because the Nuggets, like, obviously, yeah, the Joker is on the team, Jamal Murray, but then they bring in Bruce Brown back. That's a big signing. But also Cam Johnson, that might be a better fit than MPJ, because he's not going to be so ball heavy. He can still shoot it, and he's going to guard it on the other end. So I think the Nuggets definitely.
They got Tim Hardaway Jr. as well. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, so he'll probably come off the bench and be spark plug. So.
You're not a Knicks guy, but did you see the two signings?
Jordan Clarkson, yo,
Yavin Selle from the Sixers.
Yeah, I'm he's good too, but Jordan, I think Jordan Clarkson can go crazy. We don't want to make it too long, but you've been hearing Mike Brown is the favorite for the coach.
Yeah, I did. I saw reports, but you know that's all. That's everything else outside of that. I don't know.
But definitely stay tuned because we're gonna do something longer about the NBA, just us chopping about it. So definitely stay tuned for our NBA takes. Well, let's talk about this episode with B Moore, really good player, like I said. And what I like about Brian, just watching his game, and you'll hear it throughout this interview, is he's really intense, gets it, and it kind of like gets the guys under him to play with that intensity, that competitive level. And some of the stuff you're hearing about GCU and like their reports or some sneak peek videos that they're dropping is that they're really getting after. And I'm excited to see them play this year. But talk to me about talking to B Moore in this episode.
Definitely a great episode. You know, shout out your boy for, you know, patching us in for sure. And, you know, I'm glad we got to get him on the pod, bro. I mean, he's done it at every level, right? He's done it at JUCO. He was a dog. You know what I'm saying? He did it at Murray State. He killed over there. Now he's at, you know, he went to Norfolk State, mid-major college player of the year, which is not a small bag. That's super tough. And then now he's at GCU, which, you know, I don't know if we're allowed to say this, but, you know, Mountain West next year. Potentially, is that what he's saying?
Yeah, that's what he was saying. I don't know if that's gonna happen though. It's kind of like getting close to the year and stuff, but that would be tough if they were.
Regardless, they have, you know, what is equivalent to Power Five, you know, facilities and funding. So, you know, and he thought of it as kind of a sidestep. So I'm really excited to see what he does this year. And speaking more about his game, I mean, he's a three-level scorer, can get to the midi, efficient as hell, you know, to add on to your points about his game. Super efficient. I'm pretty sure. I don't know the exact percentages, honestly, but off the top of my head. But, you know, that was a point during the episode. But definitely a great conversation with bro. And I'm excited, you know, viewers to see what he got in store.
Yeah, bro. Like, he shot the one critique you could say about his game is that he's not a shooter, but he shot 39% from three. So this could really be a, like, takeoff year for him. I think that he could make some noise and really put his name in some draft or mock drafts. And also just hearing like what he puts into his game, how he's a dog, it's definitely cool to see how it's kind of paying off for him. Because I remember in high school when we were like scouting for we played them at my high school, but when we were scouting for Kingston, he wasn't like, oh my god, watch out for this guy. But now he's one of the best players in college basketball. So it's good to see that, like, the trajectory of his career already was rising like very quickly, but it's also growing at a rapid pace still to this day.
I think that's a very great point by you. Like, you know, I have a couple of teammates who are from the 845 on my team, right? And they talk a lot about that, you know, Kingston team that was really good before COVID. You know what I mean? And if Kingston is one of the better towns in the 845, and with Brian, like, you know, obviously he started at JUCO, but the trajectory of his career, like you just mentioned, like, he's killing it on every level. And now those conversations kind of shifted to where it's like, yo, like, at the end of the day, you got to give B Moore his respect. Like, he got out the mud. He's really thriving in Division I. So definitely, you know, to your point, like, huge shout out to him for grinding like that. And really, like we both mentioned, excited to see where, you know, what his future has.
Yeah. And last point, GCU. It's cool to see a mid-major program really take care of their guys. I'm seeing that him and Nana, they got really nice cars. I seen on their Instagrams. They could be more. You can see in the episodes, living in a pretty nice apartment. And it's cool because I'm not gonna say the number, but B Moore was kind of telling us what he's making. It's like, yo, that's fire that athletes are able to, like, live comfortably now because they're putting all this work in, they're putting on for their schools, and GCU realized that their school and program is taking off because of their players. So it's cool to see that. But we talk about a lot with B Moore growing up in Kingston, how he got over there, you know, what the reasons were for going to Norfolk State, not going to Howard. That was a funny part. But definitely stay tuned, subscribe, go follow us at Not Even D2, and let's hear from B Moore. We are here with our guy, B Moore. How you doing today, my guy?
Man, I'm doing great, man. Can't complain, man. Can't complain, man. Just loving life.
Yo, appreciate you getting on, my boy. What you been on today? Talk to us a little bit.
Man, just chilling, man. Early morning, man. Got up at 6:55. I had a little shooting workout, 7:15. So we usually have like our mandatory breakfast at 8:15. So I try to get in like 7:15, 7:30, get like a quick little 30-minute workout in before we have mandatory breakfast. After breakfast, we had weights, I think at 9, 8:45, 9-ish. Had weights, right from weights to workout. So I'm literally just coming back from practice and weights.
Hectic day, bro. We was talking to somebody the other day that lives in the West Coast, and it's just way different. Like, my Ruta and I, day over, we about to just be chilling. You still probably midday, got mad stuff to do. But you're in Arizona, so I know it's live out there. What you kind of be into out there, whether that's like shopping, playing a game, whatever, what's your hobbies consist of out there?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out right now. I live in a great apartment complex out here, so like I'll be going to like the pool outside, the jacuzzi. They got like game rooms. I'll be in there. But I literally just got my car out here, so now I can kind of move around and kind of bounce around from place to place to go check different things out. So, you know, it's going to be exciting in the next couple weekends and weeks to see what I get into.
Word. I feel like we can talk about this now since everybody knows NIL is a thing. How does that work with when it comes to like a crib, a car, stuff like that? Like, they just be like, we got this for you or what?
So it just depends what you have in your contract. So for me, like, everything in my NIL is strictly like money. And then I got an NIL with the car I just got. But as far as like my apartment, that all comes from like my cost of attendance. So it's like you get like if you live off campus, you get a certain amount of money each month to pay for your crib. So technically I'm not paying for it technically, but it's coming out of that money from the school that they give me to live.
Nah, you lit, bro. I'm happy for you for sure. Appreciate but I was looking and GCU kind of brought in a whole new roster from last year. They made the tournament, but they still, I think, 6 transfers and like 3 freshmen, maybe more. So I'm just kind of curious if you could talk about some of the guys that's been standing out to you, but also what preseasons look like gelling with the guys, trying to get everybody prepared for, you know, next season.
Yeah, I think it's a transition for GCU because usually they don't bring in this many people. I think like because they went to the tournament the last 4 out of 5 years, and the last 3 times they went, they only replaced like 2 people, 3 people. So this is the first time they got to replace a large number. And that wasn't even really due to the transfer portal. That was due to more so having seniors and guys that either going pro or they was just done with eligibility. But preseason been great, man. They love the energy. Like some of the new guys even said, like it's better energy than they had the last 2 years. So, you know, that's exciting just being the newcomer, knowing that we bring something positive, a new positive energy to the team. And I think everybody genuinely like each other. You know, everybody coming in, like that's the biggest thing, like trying to get on one accord that everybody would, we got to win in order for anybody to, you know, have success. But two players that's kind of been like standing out to me since we got here is Dusty Stormer. Transfer from Gonzaga. He could really, really, really shoot it. Really, really, really shoot it. And then Nana, the transfer from Brown. Yeah, he really good four man. He could shoot. He could pass. He could dribble. And then Jaden from UNLV. Like he a do it all guard for real. He's 6'8". He could play on the ball, play off the ball. So, you know, we got a lot of good pieces that, you know, right now we're just trying to build off and trying to form some chemistry.
Ruta, real quick, I know you're about to say something. I'm just going to make a quick point. Playing with Dusty and Nana gonna be big for you, bro. Cause you good with the ball in your hands, but if you got a shooter in like the corner or the wing, and then you got Nana as a lob there or a stretch guys, I'm excited to watch GCU this next year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, nah. Just having those two pieces like that was the biggest thing. Like even Coach told me, like that was the huge thing about me coming here is that like I opened up stuff for so many people just cause like you said, I could get past my man. I'm a good one-on-one player. So now, if you help, I'm kicking it off at threes. And now if you stay, now I'm getting all the way to the rim. Or if you're helping up, I'm throwing the lob to Nana. I'm throwing the lob to all the bigs and stuff like that. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's the one good piece about having, you know, really other good talent on our team.
So you've been in college basketball for a little bit, bro. And you've been on a couple different programs. So talk to me about, like, your mindset when you're entering a new team, like building chemistry with new teammates and stuff. I'm kind of interested to hear that.
Yeah, so for me, this is my fourth school, if you think about, if you count JUCO, but my third D1. I just come in with the mindset to try to win each day. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the one thing my teammates can say, like, I'm very intense, I'm very vocal, and I want to win each day. You know what I'm saying? That's the biggest thing. Like, I come into the day trying to win weights, trying to win practices, stuff like that. So I'm just trying to bring my voice, bring my experiences to the team. You know what I'm saying? And as the leader on this team, I just try to preach that, hey, like, we got to win. We got to be a team. We got to do stuff like that. So that's the mindset I came in this year, just trying to, you know, bring the guys together to hopefully have a long March Madness run this year.
Do you feel like, because at Murray State, not saying that you weren't the leader, but it wasn't like your team. You started like half the year, so obviously there were guys in front of you. So I'm just curious, do you think that you kind of developed into more of like a confident leader, or this has always been you since I don't know when?
I really think it developed in JUCO. I think when I was at Murray, I got the opportunity here and there, you know what I'm saying? Especially like my second year, but it was just more so like, you know, coach wanted other guys to step up their voice, you know what I'm saying? So stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes like coaches play a big part in, you know, what players could do and can't do it as far as like voice wise. But for the most part, I've been the same guy. I used to come in as far as coming into practice, wanting to work, wanting to get better, playing hard. Like, you know, I did that at every spot I've been at.
I don't think we had this on the original set of questions, but we've interviewed like a lot of different JUCO hoopers, bro. And like one thing about them, like their drive to become great is like different than like other like college basketball players. So how do you feel like your own like JUCO experience has like influenced your college career now?
I think the biggest thing is, man, you know, me going to JUCO, it made me like my own biggest critique, you know what I'm saying? So like even today in practice, like I was locking up, I was getting assists, I was doing stuff, and I'm still upset talking to one of our coaches like, man, I got to hit shots. You know what I'm saying? He's telling me all the good things I'm doing, but now I got to do this. I got to get back in rhythm. You know, I think it's just always for me, like, how can I elevate my game? How can I be at my best at all times? You know, even though it's not realistic, you're not going to hit 100% of your shots. You're not going to have the best practice every week. But, you know, that's like my drive. Like, I'm going to try to get better every day. You know, if I'm having a rough day, I might come back to the gym tonight. I might come back in the gym. Let's work on certain things I didn't do good today. So that's just my mindset, man. Just always trying to get better, like each and every day.
That's the mindset. That's the mindset of ones that make it, bro. So, you know what I mean? So I love hearing that. And, you know, I want to talk about, obviously, you at GCU right now, but you won a really big award, bro, the Lou Henson Award, which is given to the top mid-major player in college basketball, which is fire. So just talk about, like, your experience in the transfer portal after winning that, like, prestigious award.
Yeah, it was definitely a busy transfer portal, but my agent, Austin Wilton, he did a great job with setting up schools that he knew were, like, good for me. Like, the biggest thing when I talked to him, he asked me what's the three biggest things. And one, I wanted to be a part of another winning tradition. I wanted to come into the place that I'll have the same role or a similar role to what I had the previous year, and just a place I could go and develop and be a pro. And obviously the NIL pieces came with it. And he kind of set certain schools that were up, because I had a big list. You know, I had a lot of P4 schools. I had some really good schools. But, you know, we narrowed it down to a couple schools. And then it's kind of from there, it was just an easy pick to pick GCU.
Nah, that's fire, bro. Can you just talk a little bit more about what type of schools or coaches you were talking to in the portal?
For sure. I talked to Florida State. I talked to Arizona State. I talked to Vandy. I talked to a bunch of Power Fives. I can't think of all the ones off the head, but those were some of them. I talked to Xavier. Some coaches from San Diego State hit me. So it's kind of was all over the place. But like the ones that was most consistent that I was really considering was like Florida State and GCU.
Word. How long have you been at GCU, real quick, before I ask you this next question?
Probably, probably going on 3 weeks. I've been here since, like, May 27th.
Word. So I seen that Jordan McCabe is one of the assistants now, and he's one of the, like, top trainers. Well, I can't say that to be true, but in my opinion, seeing the stuff he posts on social media and stuff, he definitely knows what he's talking about. I'm just curious if you get in the gym with him at all, and if not, like, what are the coaches telling you or what y'all be working on?
Yeah, for sure. So today was his first day, actually. So he literally got on campus today. The one thing with GCU, like, they being such a good program, that assistant coaches get elevated each year. So coaches then went to Pepperdine, then went to these other schools to, you know, elevate their position. So, you know, coaches like assistant coach recruiting right now, and Jordan came with us today. So he literally, today was his first practice. He had great energy, man. He was in there trying to motivate the guys. I'm excited to work with him. I already texted him, actually, after practice. I texted him, like, hey, look, like, once you get settled in the Phoenix, like, let's get a workout schedule for the rest of the summer. So, you know, I know he's a big, like, you know, we know who Jordan McCabe is coming up. You know what I'm saying? High school, college, you feel me? So I'm excited to get to work with him.
No, that's tough. Definitely looking to see how that kind of elevates your game. But I was watching your film, and you're definitely a really good finisher at the rim. You could finish right and left-handed. And also, this kind of – you've been a good finisher even since, like, high school. But more what I want to talk about is I think, like, 70% of your baskets last year were at the rim. So I'm kind of curious if you could walk us through what the summer looked like for you or the off season looked like for you, what you've been working on, whether that's like keeping that skill of finishing at an elite level at the rim versus other parts of your game, maybe that's 3-point shooting, ETC, something like that.
Yeah. So what we've been working on, one, my body, that's the biggest thing, just making sure my body right. I played 35 out of 35 games last year, and that was the first time in my career I played every game. So just trying to continue to stay healthy because, you know, without the wheels, without my body being healthy, I can't perform at a high level. So it was a big summer for me, for my body. Still going on, you know, we had a great strength and conditioning coach over here. And as far as, like, basketball-wise, it's just still incorporating that part of my game, but incorporating the three ball more, still getting to my midi, being more of a playmaker, stuff like that. So those are the flashes that, you know, the next step in my transition as I go into my last year of college basketball.
So you mentioned the midi, and that was my next question, bro. A lot of coaches nowadays will sometimes hate on the mid-range. You know what I mean? Like, some may call it an inefficient shot. You know what I mean? I'm not some coach. I'm not some people. I think it's a great shot. And this is a big part of your game, bro. Like, you get to the – obviously, KJ mentioned you can get to the rim, but, you know, to add on to that, like you mentioned, you pulling up from mid-range, stopping on a dime, you know what I mean, and using that to your bag. And we see players today like Shea and Andrew Nembhard, you know what I'm saying, using the mid-range to their advantage and really making a – Pascal Siakam, like just making a living off those type of shots. So just talk about your confidence in the mid-range and how you think it helps your overall game.
I think the biggest thing is it make me like a dual threat, because not only can I just get past you and get to the rim, but now you playing – trying to stop me from getting to the rim, I could just stop up. I could go right behind, right into my shot. So I just think it's always been a big part of my game just because I'm so good at getting to the rim. So you got to obviously have counters to certain things. So I think that's why I really became a big part of my game. And I feel like I'm one of the best mid-range shooters in college basketball. You know what I'm saying? If you look from a number standpoint, from a make standpoint. So, you know, that's one of my go-tos.
That's a fact. Real quick, when I'm looking at your shot, from three, it kind of looks like you have – I don't want to say unorthodox, but maybe a little bit of hitch in there. Yeah. Is it, like, just a more comfortable feeling in the mid-range? Or do you feel that, like, difference in your jumper from three versus mid-range?
For sure. I think the biggest difference is I don't get the same elevation on my three-point shot that I do on my midi. So that's kind of the reason for, like, the hitch, because I don't really – I got to get more lift in my shot from three, because I have a lot of lift on my shot from midi. So that's kind of the difference in the quote-unquote form.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm a big mid-range player too, and it's the same problem. Like from three, you can't get your legs the same way into the jumper as you try to, but that's a good point. And I'm kind of curious. We were talking to Amari Monroe. He plays out in Quinnipiac right now.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how
– 845 right there. That's
two, he was saying that Quinnipiac's kind of bringing in some NBA shooting coaches, or people are reaching out to him, working on his jump shot. Do you like who helping you with your form or anything like that?
At GCU, they're not really quote unquote helping me with my form, but just making sure I get a lot of reps, making sure my feet and stuff like that. It's not so much of trying to change my form, maybe speed it up a little, stuff like that, but I create so much space that I'm able to get my shots off and stuff like that. So that's kind of what it's been, more so like trying to just stay efficient, because I think I shot like 39 from three this year. So just trying to stay efficient, but trying to increase my volume from three. So that's the biggest thing. So it's just really working on my feet, working on staying on balance, stuff like that, rather than actually changing the whole shot. So,
nah, we definitely going to talk about that efficiency later in the episode, bro. But before we get to that, so when I was like doing research for the episode, right, usually like we'll put in person's name in YouTube or like Google or whatever. So I did that for YouTube, and I seen you had a crazy buzzer beater, bro, against NC Central, I think. Is that the team? And it was like you had someone behind you, bro. It was like you were like still running while you shot it, but I think you banked it in or something like that. And then the crowd was going crazy. So just talk about that moment, bro, and what you remember about that day.
Yeah, that so it was crazy. So last year we only had like 4 national TV games, and that was one of our national TV games. And it was just, it was crazy. Like, no exaggeration. I didn't know I made it until the crowd went crazy. Because I literally, so I knew we was going to win the game because, like, when I caught the ball and I shot, he pushed me from the back. So I'm like, oh, yeah, he going to call that. So I heard the whistle. I heard the foul. Boom. So I'm thinking everybody cheering because I got fouled. I'm about to shoot 3 free throws. I don't even see the ball going to the rim. So I didn't find out I made the buzzer beater until after. And then I had to watch the video to be like, yo, bro, I didn't even know how I made the shot. I didn't know if it banked in. I didn't know if it went through the net. So it was like, yo, like, it was crazy. Like, I was hyped. I was so hyped. I literally, like, it was an and one. So I got a free throw at the end. I literally bricked the free throw. That's how hyped I was. It was, like, crazy. But, I mean, like, I feel like we all grew up and we all want a moment like that. So, you know, to have that moment in that game, because it was crazy because we was down by 5. We was down by two with like 30 seconds left. I get a layup to tie it up. Boom. We get a stop on the other end. We close like a travel or something. And then I hit the game winning 3. So like, I had them last 5 points in the last 30 seconds. It was just crazy. Like, yo, like, did this really happen? Like, we were supposed to lose that game. And then, you know, magic happened. So, you know, we all dream of a moment like that. So I was just happy that it came true for me that day.
Nah, that was definitely tough seeing that shit, bro. I'm not going to lie.
I want to transition to a little bit more about this past year at Norfolk State. And you guys had a really good year, 20 plus wins, 11-3 in the conference, which is big time in the MEAC, number one seed. And I want to talk specifically about like postseason play. You guys won the MEAC, but it was all really good games. I think the largest margin was 7 points. The other games, you won by 3 and 1-1. So every game in the playoffs is a battle. So just talk about, I feel like since you made the NCAA tournament, people lost sight that you won the MEAC. So just talk about the emotions when in the conference, because ultimately that's what every team's trying to do. And then also we don't got to talk too much because y'all kind of got worked in against Florida. But just talk about making it to the tournament, all that.
So the biggest thing with us, man, because that was our goal the whole year. You know, Norfolk is another mid-major powerhouse that make it to the tournament every year. But they lost the last 2 years to the same team, the Howard. So. You know, coming in, we just knew like, hey, like we the targeted, like we the number one seed, like teams go be out to beat us. We was beating teams by 20, 15, all types of numbers during the regular season. So, you know, just going into there, like we was just mentally ready for like battles. And it's crazy. So the first game, I actually I sprained my ankle first game, literally like first 3 minutes of the game. So I didn't play the rest of the first half. Second half, I probably should have been back, came back in the game, but it got close. So I literally played the whole playoffs, including Florida, on the injured foot.
You could kind of tell, not trying to be like that, but you could kind of tell you didn't have that burst.
For sure. Like, I ain't had no burst. I was still banged up. I had other stuff I was already dealing with. So, you know, I had to get a cortisone shot just to be even ready to play for Florida. So I didn't practice no games. I mean, I ain't practiced no practices before we went to go to Florida besides, like, the day before.
That's
because I was just messed up. My ankle was messed up. My wrist was messed up. I had to get a cortisone shot. Like, all types of things was going on. Just trying to, you know, get my body prepared to play. So, you know, that was just a tough thing. I was healthy all season. And then I got literally injured on, like, a freak play. Like, literally, like, I think we was they was in a zone. I'm cutting through. He stepped. He, like, slide his foot. Like, it was a legal play. Like, he slide his foot. He catch my foot. My foot turned. He stepped on it. Bam. Just like that.
Damn.
So, like, it was crazy. Like, it wasn't even nothing that I could have, quote, unquote, prevented. It was just, like, a little accident. And it kind of derailed my play at the last, you know, couple games. I just wasn't nowhere near 100%. You know what I'm saying? Especially in that atmosphere where you're playing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, off game Saturday. You know what I'm saying? I don't really get no time to rest. You know what I'm saying? So, it was tough for me, like, just trying to get through that time period. But, you know, me being out there made a difference. You know what I'm saying? Whether I'm healthy or not, you know, I draw so much attention to stuff like that. So me being out there, whether I'm 50%, 80%, like I'm going to still be effective in some shape, form, or fashion.
Word. It was active when y'all won the chip? Like the Norfolk State was active?
Oh, yeah. It was tough. We had a good night after that. Yeah, they got us a little section. We was out and about. We was riding around the city. Yeah, it was
tough. That's hard.
Nah, we were just about to ask that, bro, because we had a football player that plays at Morgan State on the pod, and he was talking about how, like, the, you know, the HBCU is fire, like, going to HBCU. So just talk about how fun that was for you as a student athlete.
It was definitely like a different experience because it was funny. Like I personally didn't think I would ever go to HBCU just because, you know, I was highly recruited at JUCO. I would, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. But, you know, like going to Norfolk State from a basketball standpoint, it's not your typical HBCU when you think about basketball. You know, as they ranked in the top 25 for mid-majors every year. Coach Robert Jones is a great coach. So, but from a school standpoint, it's just so different. Like you surrounded by mad culture, like homecoming week is crazy. Especially at Norfolk, like we got like, it's called not your typical homecoming for a reason. That's the name of all things. Like it's different. 300,000 there, no cell phone reception, all black. Like it's a vibe at the HBCU. I'm gonna definitely miss the HBCU culture for sure.
I feel that. Yeah, but yo, were you supposed to go to Howard?
Yes.
So talk to me about what happened with that.
So I had originally committed to Howard. And I was waiting for a class to get back, and I missed the Division I qualification by 0.25 credits. Damn. So I only qualified for because, you know, obviously you got to have a certain GPA with your core classes in order for you to get an athletic scholarship. I missed about 2.5 credits. Damn. So I qualified for Division II, but I didn't qualify for Division I. And I just always thought, like, hey, like, I'm a Division I player. So I'm like, I'm not about to sell myself short and go D2. Because once people found that out, I had every D2 damn man, America. You feel me?
Yeah.
So the biggest thing was like, I bet, like, what's the next step? So that's why I went JUCO, and I had to do 2 years at JUCO because it was like literally, and that time, if you didn't graduate, because they're changing the rule now, if you didn't qualify out of high school, they'll make you graduate from your junior college in order for you to go Division
I. Oh, wow. Nah, that's crazy, bro. But you got to be grateful that it happened that way because, like you said, you learned about a little about yourself. You became a leader at JUCO. Now you're playing, like, really – they're not high major basketball, but Grand Canyon, a really good school. They treat you guys like high major players. But I don't know if you're going to get tight, but the reason why I said, did you go to Howard, is because that viral video when you and Dior was arguing.
For sure.
Fuck I am. He has no offers. He's a bum. You stupid, nigga. I'm going to Howard, nigga. Howard.
Was you tight when that came out? Nah,
the reason why I wasn't really tight because, like, Well, a lot of people don't know is me and Dio grew up together. Like, me and Dio are so cool to the day. Like, we text back and forth and all that. Two competitors, and they caught a feisty moment on camera. Like, we done said way worse to each other when we was playing on the court one-on-ones on live and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, we had the same trend growing up. So, we playing one-on-one on live. We doing this. We competing all the time. So, I didn't take no offense to it. You know, people blew it up. But, like, I'm a knowledge when I bust somebody's ass. Like, just because that clip came out, I was busting his ass that whole run. You know that to the day. You feel me? And that's my guy. Like, I ain't never going to put no shade on him. He a great player, but I was busting his ass that day. You feel me? But it was just crazy how that came out. But the whole New York stood up for me. That's the one thing I can say. The whole New York stood up for me. Literally, overtime posted a video, like, the next day and meet my buckets and stuff like that. So that was a cool little period of time in my life where, you know, I had that happen and then boom, like, Overtime posted a good video on me. I think it got like 400,000 views, like, you know, stuff like that. So it was crazy. So it was good that New York stood up for me. I seen the whole Harlem, the whole 845 just commenting on it. Like, yeah, bro, I know B-Moy ain't go out like this. Like, I know he was – he said, I don't even have to be there. I know he was hooping. So, like, I mean, it was good that New York stood up for me.
Nah, no cap. I want to talk about, like, growing up in Kingston. You mentioned Dior. That's my guy, too. We used to play AAU together. Also know you boys with Damani. Tay patched us in with you. So just talk about, like, growing up in Kingston, playing high school ball there, and your, like, some of your memories playing at Kingston.
So for me, it was kind of weird just because, like, I moved up. So I lived in Harlem for 15 years of my life. Still lived in Harlem growing up. So I literally only moved to Kingston because I wanted a new opportunity as far as, like, high school wise. So because I got kicked off, I was a freshman on varsity in New York City, and I got kicked off the team. So when I came up to Kingston for a summer. So mind you, I'm not even supposed to be – I didn't move up here. I'm just coming up here for a summer. My pops had just got out of jail. So my pops and his – part of his probation was he couldn't live in New York City. So he moved to Kingston. So he was in Kingston. I stayed with him for a couple weeks in the summer, and then I liked it. And this was the story with Tay coming. So, like, right the week before I was supposed to go back to the city, I go to Tay Fish Camp. I'm there. Damani Thomas is there. Dior is there.
Shit, I probably was there.
You might have been there. But we all there, and I'm hooping, and I was cooking crisp. cooking. So Tay coming to me after the camp, like, yo, like, what school you go to? Like, where you from? Like, y'all from Harlem, blah, blah, blah. He's like, yo, you playing a high school boy down there? I'm like, nah, like, yo, I got kicked off the team. Like, I'm trying to find a new high school, this and that. He said, well, like, I'm one of the best players to come out of the high school up here. Like, I could get you on varsity with Coach Kelder. Like, that's my guy. I'm like, nah, for real? Like, he was like, yeah, like, I get you on a phone call. Like, if you move up here, like, I could get you into the school and you go have a good role. So I'm like, I bet. So I made the call to my moms. I'm like, yo, I'm about to move up to Kingston for this year to see if it's going to help change my life. And ultimately, it did. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could put me up there with the best players to come, not just out of Kingston, but out of the 845, period. You feel me? So it definitely was a good decision. But the hardest part was I feel like Kingston is a big community. Upstate in general is a big community where, like, everybody, like, grew up together. You feel me? So you might have friends that you was in elementary school with, middle school. So, like, for me, it was different because I'm just a new kid coming from Harlem. You feel me? And everybody, like, a lot of New York City, like, a lot of New York people got, like, a little stereotype of all people coming from the Bronx, Brooklyn, Harlem, shit like that. So you think I'm just a cocky-ass little nigga from New York. You feel me? So, but me going to Kingston, man, like, I instantly made some good connections and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously it helped me get to where I'm at today. So that basically, I'm always grateful for Kingston. You know, I always say I'm from Harlem, but Kingston is a big part of my life too, especially from the high school standpoint.
Nah, word. So one of my teammates, Ryan McCardo, he's from, like, Kingston. He's a little bit younger than you, but, like, yeah, that's my boy. Shout out my boy Ryan. But one Chris Bamba, he was from Kingston too, and, like, he's a big part of the Utica program, bro. And, like, this is a little bit of, like, on a different note, but just, like, talk about, like, Bamba's impact on you and, like, the overall Kingston community that you've seen. Because I know they were having, like, the Bamba Day Forum, like, the street tournament. So just talk about that, bro.
Yeah, so for me, what a lot of people don't know is, like, that's my blood first cousin. So when I first moved the cousin to Kingston, me and my pops, you know, obviously he was bouncing around. He just got out of jail. So for a large part of time, I lived with me, Chris Bamba, Damian Moore, which is his older brother. We all three lived in the same room. Like, we lived in the same house, but we lived in the same room. Like, literally, like, him and his brother had two beds, and I slept on one of them, like, pull-out beds. What it's called? That kind of basically a pull-out couch, but the other one, it's called like a maybe having hotels, futon. Yes. So we all three stayed in the same room. So, like, mind you, like, I grew up with Chris and everything. I seen him go from living in the Bronx to living in Harlem to see him living in Kingston. And, you know, he just, like, he a bright soul, a bright person, you know what I'm saying? Like, he literally, like, smart, hoop, all of that, you know what I'm saying? And everybody loved him. Like, no matter where Bamba went, like, he just had that gravitational pull that everybody loved him, you know what I'm saying? So, and me, like, literally, like, we didn't have no cars, you know what I'm saying? That's the biggest thing. Coming from New York City, going to upstate, like, you don't realize how bad you need a car. You feel me? So none of us, we don't got no license. We don't got no car, nothing. So, like, literally, like, me and him I'm waking him up in the morning at 5:30. Yo, we going to go work out. Yo, we going to do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been through everything with Chris. Like, literally, like, the day before our first game of our senior year, because we both were seniors at the same time, our crib burned down. And the only thing we grabbed was our bag with our jerseys and our shoes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I done been through the trenches with him. You feel me? Like, I got him tatted on me. I went number 5 because of him. So, you know, he's a big impact on my life. And I literally was just telling this story. Like, I felt like after he passed away, like, it just awoke something in me. You know what I'm saying? I just felt like I already had the drive to go be great, but I just feel like it just still to this day, like, him passing away is a huge part of where I'm at today. Just because, like, I literally, like, not only did I dedicate everything to him, but I feel like a part of him still lives in me with what I'm doing and my success. You know what I'm saying? So that's the biggest thing. Like, I'm still carrying his name. Like you said, like, the Bamba Day is, like, me and my family, we run those. You know, we set it up. We go get the players. We do all of that. So, you know, I still try to keep his name alive. I still try to honor him in different ways. And, you know, obviously, I still take care of our family. So,
nah, bro, like, I said, like, Utica, that's Bamba's a big part, like, the Utica program. Like, I came in the year after he, you know, passed away. And a lot of the seniors was, like, mad close about him. And I just heard all the stories and stuff like that. And, you know, like, all those. And, like, when they had, like, his senior day, like, because he, like, his senior class, when they had their senior day, like, his family came up and stuff like that, bro. And it was one of, like, I'll never forget that moment, like, in my college basketball career, like, seeing his family and, like, the emotion in the gym. Like, you could tell what type of person he was just by how everyone was reacting. Like, my boy Tommy Morial, who I don't expect you to know him, but he was on the team at Utica, and, like, he's very stoic. Like, he was getting emotional, and that told it all, bro, for real.
No, for sure.
Nah, Bamba forever. Rest in peace to that boy. But stay with us while we take a quick break.
All right, we back. Not even D2 pod with our guy B More. So when I was looking on like Norfolk State, their profile on you, right? They have like your stats and all that. One like stat that I seen that they had posted on the website was you were the only guard in the country to average 18 a game while shooting 54% from the field. That's like elite numbers. So what does that stat say about your efficiency and like shot selection? And do you take pride in that too?
Yeah, I definitely take pride in my shot selection. Like I'm not a person that just be chucking up shots. You know what I'm saying? So that's the biggest thing. Like with me, like I've always been efficient through high school, through everywhere. In JUCO, I shot like 53%. So like I've always been efficient no matter where I went, just because like I take good shots. I take shots that I work on and I just get to my spots. You know what I'm saying? Like I got automatics on this spot where I know if I get to these certain spots, like, oh yeah, it's going up. And 90% of the time it's going in. So
a big reason I feel that I think you are going to have a big year regardless, but a big reason why I think your production went crazy is because Coach Jones at Norfolk State, like he really got a fast paced offense. You guys get after and get out and run. So that's good for you. You got the ball in your hands and you just on fast breaks a lot. But just talk about, you know, we were talking off air, I believe, about how he's got 4 20-win seasons last however many years. So just talk about like what makes him such a good coach and, you know, what the future looks like for him.
I think the biggest thing what makes Coach Jones a good coach is that, like, he understands that each year it's a different team. You know what I'm saying? Now, he keeps his philosophies as far as defense and stuff like that, but offensively, like, he recruits certain players, but if he thinks something, offense might change or something might be better for the team, he's going to go do that. You know, at the end of the day, like, he's not one of these coaches that's stuck in their ways. Like, hey, we're going to run these same sets every year. We gonna force players to do this and that. Like, he kind of let players play off their strengths. And like you said, like, we play like an up-tempo pace. And I feel like that's the biggest thing from where I came from, like, Murray-wise to where we was at. Because, like, not only, like, when I was at Murray did we play slow, but we was in a conference that played extremely slow. Like, if you look at teams like Drake, like, even this past year, the same way they played in the tournament is they hold it. They want to play in the 50s and the 60s. They're not trying to score a lot of points. They're trying to shoot 3 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, that's how the whole Missouri Valley played. So that, like, how the conference played didn't match, like, kind of my play style. You know what I'm saying? Either on either end, offensively or defensively, because we didn't really get after the ball, nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? So at Murray, it was kind of harder for me to show certain parts of my game just because we having long sets. I'm just sitting in the corner, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think the biggest thing is, like, he let me be me. You know what I'm saying? He let me be the player I was in JUCO. He put me on the ball. He let me make decisions. He let me be aggressive. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you tell it to him, I wasn't as aggressive as he thought I should have been at times. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Like, he just put a battery in players' backs that he knows that's really good and be like, hey, look, like, here's the keys to the car. Like, go run my team. So I think that's the biggest thing that make him, like, a great coach. And, like, he held everybody accountable. Best player, worst player, manager, coaches, like, he hold everybody accountable. And a lot of programs not like that, especially like the one I came from at Murray. Like, it just wasn't like that. You know, players got away with certain things that they shouldn't have got away with. And I'm a big accountability guy. Like, if I'm not doing shit right, like, I'm a go correct it. I'm a go call it all. Yo, I got to be better. I do certain stuff like that. But coach wasn't on that type of time. So, but Jones, he don't let nothing fly. And you got to earn everything with him. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. And I think the next step for him is I think he could coach at the Power Five, but the biggest thing is just understanding for him, just understanding, like, yes, stay true to who you are, because he from Queens and he act like Queens here and out. He gonna curse you out. Now, real quick, like, he gonna curse you out, like, he gonna be an animated New York City coach. That's exactly what he is. But he great at what he do. But I feel like the next step for him is keep that part of him that makes him so great, but be more professional about it so you could be more of an attraction to Power
Five. I was going to bring this up. I was going to say, like, he's a G, but you make a good point, because I was watching some of his interviews last night. He always got sunglasses on, stuff like that. And no shade.
Flashy, very flashy.
Yeah, no shade against that. But you feel me? Especially as a black man, too, like, sometimes if you want to get to that level, you got to kind of.
For sure. And I look at it at both ways, just because, like, one, like, at the end of the day, you hire him to play basketball, to coach basketball. You're not hiring him to be wear suits all day, do this. Like, you hire him to go win games. So I feel like how he acts and how he presents himself should not matter. But you know the world we live in, that matters, especially for all color, for colored people like us, it matters. So I think that's the biggest thing. Like, if you want to make that transition, just being more professional about how you go about things as far as like day to day, as far as interactions with others, as far as certain things not to say versus to say in interviews, because he speaks his mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, he don't care. You know what I'm saying? Like, he gonna say whatever's on his mind, stuff like that. Like, he not gonna sugarcoat it. Like, he a New York City G and threw it out. And you feel me? Like, that's just his whole persona. So if he was able to clean that up and just kind of be more professional, man, I could see him coaching in a Power Five conference, just because like he's a really good coach. Really good coach.
Bro, that's a fact. We gotta talk about some now. So you won Lou Henson Mid-Major Player of the Year, and you didn't win MEAC Player of the Year. Yo,
it's some crazy stuff behind that, but
that's an off air topic.
And I can be on air; it don't really matter. The MEAC conference, how upset I am. So
it's like, all right. So I'm looking at the stats, and I think the only thing Blake Harper averaged more is points by a little bit. But yeah, it's like Norfolk State was the number one seed, so I'm not really. He's a freshman too.
And it's crazy. So like, for example, like, so every time we played them, I had to go kill, just because we knew like that we was the two. So like the first time we played Howard, I think I had like 34-5.
And he didn't have his
he best didn't play. Game. I think he had like 16-15. And then when we beat them at their crib to be the number one seed, I think I had like 21-6-6. You know what I'm saying? Like, and the biggest thing what I was told is, so the player of the year, the last 4 years came from Norfolk State players. Two times Joe Bryan. It was somebody before Joe Bryan. And then it was Jamari Thomas, who went to South Carolina. So they didn't want, even though I had the better stats than the last four player of the years, I had way better stats than. Even though I had better stats, they wanted to give it to somebody fresh. They was waiting for somebody to even be remotely close. Because think about it like this. They was like 12-19 on the year. And they were like 10-7 in conference, and they gave him Player of the Year, which is crazy,
bro. Because I seen a clip of you after the game. He was like, "The real Player of the Year, right here. The real Player of the Year." I was like, "Wait,
we had a feeling they wasn't gonna give it to me, because, like, even for example, like Coach Jones won 25 games. He didn't get Coach of the Year. You know what I'm saying? So like, he kind of knew, like, we had the best team. We had players like Jalen Myers should have been on first team. I don't even think he made a team. Like, it was stuff like that. I was like, yo, come on. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we had really good players that wasn't making teams. Like, the other point guard that we had, the flashy point guard, he was third team. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that, like, on the number one team. Like, usually when you get a team that's number one, you're going to have three players on the first team, a couple players on the second team. I was the only person that made a team other than the other point guard.
Politics, bro. Politics all the time.
They just say, and they tired of Norfolk State winning all the awards and winning everything. You know what I'm saying? So any slight chance of another coach, another program in the conference that's coming up, they're going to give the award to them every time. Because they're just tired of seeing Norfolk State players win. So,
like you said, y'all recognize that at some point, like, we the ones that's hunted. Like, we got to keep that on our back. But, I mean, obviously you talked about going against Blake Harper, who at Howard, but just talk about some of the other good guards or matchups that you look forward to, because the MEAC, good conference, and I was looking, the top three scores in the MEAC was all guards. So just talk about how you had to prepare each day and who are your favorite matchups.
I think his first name is Cam. I'm going to go Cam Hobbs. He was tough from Morgan State. Yeah, he was nice. Small guard. He was a really good guard. He was tough. Obviously, Blake Harper is a good player. He's more like a forward, I say. He can handle it, but he's more like a tweener for real. He's like more like a 3-4 than a guard. But it was some really good guards in that conference. I'm trying to just think off the top. Oh, Keyshawn Hall, who just got transferred to ODU. He was tough. Tough athletic guard, 6'5".
Robert Smith, nice too.
Robert Smith is tough. Robert Smith, I forgot about Robert Smith. He's tough. We kind of connected a little bit throughout the season. So he tough. Even the other guard that they had, what was his name? Not Rob, but it was the other one. He wore like number 3 for Dell State. Hmm. He was tough.
Nah, that the MEAC definitely got good hoopers, bro. It's cool seeing the HBCU conference have, you know, so much competitive parity throughout the conference. Each year is a battle, especially the conference tournament, always is lit. But obviously you at GCU now, and you're just coming off a really good year where you should have been conference player of the year, but we'll skip that. Just talk about, like, what your goals are for this next season playing for Grand Canyon, both for yourself and then for the team as a whole.
Yeah, for me, I definitely want to go be on first team. Or if we do get in them, because we still got to get in. If we do get into the Mountain West Conference, I definitely want to be a player of the year candidate, a first team guy. And then as far as team-wise, man, I want to get to the Sweet 16. I think we got a really good team. I think we can make a really good push. Like, the conference we in, if we get into the reserve, into the Mountain West, it's like a four-bid, five-big league. You know what I'm saying? Like, last year, they got Colorado State in, Utah State, San Diego State, Boise State, and it was one in New Mexico. They had five teams in last year. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, if we win the conference, like, we're going to be a seventh seed, an eighth seed, where we get a legit shot to go make some noise. Like, even, like, at Norfolk, we to this day, NCAA did us wrong. We should have been a 15 or 14 seed easily.
Yeah, I got easily. Florida.
They gave us 16, and they gave us the best number one seed. Like, come on. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they knew what they was doing. You know what I'm saying? They definitely knew what they was doing. So, that's just the tough part. But, like, going to this conference, like, you get a legit shot. If you compete in this conference, you get a legit shot to be an 11 seed, a 10 seed, an 8 seed, where you could go make some noise. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the biggest thing, like, trying to prepare for that, trying to get mentally, physically, spiritually, like, ready to go on this journey.
Nah, definitely excited to see what y'all do this year. I mean, y'all got some of the top, you know, transfers out, you know, that was in the portal, you know what I'm saying? Yourself, Nana, you know, Dusty transfer from Gonzaga. He was a highly rated prospect coming out of high school. So I'm sure all y'all going to kill this year. It's going to be a good year for GCU, bro.
Yes, sir.
For sure. But usually we end these episodes with rapid fire and starting five. So I'm gonna start the rapid fire. You ready, bro?
I bet.
All right. So what's one song that's always in your pregame playlist?
A Lot of Cake by Gunna.
A lot. Okay. Well, you a big Gunna fan?
Yeah, I like Gunna. Gunna talk.
He just dropped today. I hope you listen to that, bro.
He dropped today?
Yeah.
I'm going to tap in right after this. When I'm going to that barbershop, I got like a 20-minute drive album the whole time.
Hit us in the chat. Let us know what you think about the song, bro.
Heard you.
Oh, it's just a song? It's not an album?
Yeah, it's just a song.
Heard you.
Yeah. So you played in the MEAC like we've been talking about. What was the most hostile gym that you ever played in?
NC Central, by far. That joint is crazy.
Talk a little bit about that environment, just a quick
bit. They fans is, because, like, we had great fans, but our fans was into the game. Like, for example, like, if we played at 7:30, they won't get into the gym. The gym won't be packed until after halftime. You know what I'm saying? Like, real talk. Like, they be on black people time.
Black people time.
Real talk. NC Central, they be in the games. They be having pom-poms. They be talking crazy, like. Yeah. NC Central is arena. Like, I ain't gonna lie. Like, I don't think Norfolk won there in the last, like, 6 years. Mm. Or since, like, 2016 or something like that. Like, it's a very hostile environment.
That's tough. And then last rapid fire question I got for you. Who is the funniest teammate from each of the schools that you've been at? Obviously, it's tough to say GCU because you just got there, but previous schools.
I could say JUCO is definitely Jaden Graves from Syracuse or Khalil Kamara from the Bronx. Them two together was crazy. Like, I had a lot of fun with JUCO because of them two. When I was at Murray State, the first year, the first year was Jamari Smith. He's actually Jabari Smith's cousin. The second year was my boy Nick Ellington. He's funny. That's still my boy to the day. And then probably at Norfolk, yes, we had some. Probably one of our freshmen.
Okay. Yeah,
probably one of our freshmen. I think it'd be either like Mikel Jenkins or Melo Baines. They both was funny.
Right.
And then here, like, we got some people that's funny on the team, like Makai Williams. He real funny. He was a returner from last year. He funny.
Wait, is he just clowning people or is it just a sense of humor type?
It's just his sense of humor. He be clowning the manager and stuff like that. But he cool. He cool people though.
No, that's funny. But we got to move to the starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be in this edition? Going to be the best teammates that you've had throughout your whole career. So it could be from high school all the way to now. And just tell me where you play with them at, what position they play in your lineup.
That's a good question.
And if you need time or something, we could just cut it out.
Yeah, and I could do rapid fire. I say I'll put me at the one.
Okay, heard you.
At the two. At the two, I can use GCU.
Yeah.
At the two, I'll put Dusty.
Okay.
I'll put Dusty at the two. At the three, I would put. I'm gonna skip the three. I'm gonna go to the five. Five, I already got my five. Nikita, he played at Notre Dame last year.
Okay.
Big Nikita would be the five. The four, I would probably have. I probably have the four we have now. I'll probably go Nana.
Top.
And then at our three, our probably the best three I'm playing with is probably Jaden. So I'll probably have three GCU players on that.
That's tough. That's a little sneak peek into next year's little lineups that y'all about to be having. But that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you getting on the show, bro. And good luck next year.
Thanks for having me. Yes, sir.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.